Thanks for the opportunity to speak before you today. In opening, I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Gadigal clan of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and those present today. Being homeless is a complex issue, as we have heard. It's created by the failure of a variety of service systems. Homeless people and those at risk of homelessness are affected by common themes that include social exclusion, an ineffective service system, lack of access to housing that is affordable to people on low incomes, and a lack of support and supported accommodation services. Through more than 20 years of working with homeless and marginalised people, I can clearly say that most people don't choose to become homeless. It is not a lifestyle choice. Being homeless is being without shelter, without resources, without support, without recognition, and without power to influence society. Every night across Australia, almost 100,000 people are homeless. The census tells us where these people are staying. Half are staying with relatives and friends. 20% are living in boarding houses and other temporary accommodation. 15% are sleeping rough on the streets of our cities and towns. And 15% find a bed in the Supported Accommodation Program, or the SAP, homeless service system. We have to remember that the nature of homelessness means that people will not be static. Whilst the census gives us this snapshot, people will be moving between the different states of homelessness throughout their experience. Of this 100,000 people, 58% were male, 42% were female. 36% were aged 12 to 24, and a further 10% were accompanying children under 12 years of age. What this tells us is that 46% of those counted as homeless in the 2001 census were 24 years old or younger. I find this figure appalling, as many of them will become the homeless adults of tomorrow. In Australia, we have legislation that defines how a person can be described as homeless, the Supported Accommodation Assistance Act. According to the Act, a person is homeless if they do not have access to safe, secure, adequate housing. And they're considered not to have access to that housing if the only housing to which they have access damages or is likely to damage their health, threatens their safety, marginalises them through failing to provide access to adequate personal amenity or the economic and social supports that a house normally affords, places them in circumstances which threaten or adversely affect the adequacy, safety, security, affordability of that housing, or has no security of tenure, that is, they have no legal right to continued occupation of their home. And a person is also considered homeless if they are living in accommodation provided by a SAP agency. Today, I'm going to build on what my two colleagues have been talking about, and I'm going to look at the impact of homelessness when looked at through the lens of the rights-based agenda, giving examples to highlight challenges faced by homeless people. I believe that we need to move to a model that supports homeless people to assert their rights, have expectations about the minimum level of support and assistance they should expect, and thus assist their moves to citizens able to participate in our democracy. So the right to adequate housing, we've already heard some about that. We know from SAP data generated by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare that there is significant unmet demand for homeless assistance services. On an average day in 2005-06, SAP had to turn away 356 people who were seeking immediate accommodation, around one third of them children. This may not sound like many people. However, when thinking about unmet demand, we also need to think about those who do not present to a SAP service as they expect there will be no beds available. We know only 15% of those who are homeless were in a Supported Accommodation Assistance Program service. I would suggest that this unmet demand figure is a significant undercount of the real demand for homeless assistance. If that 356 people were a new 356 people each day, that would represent more than 100,000 additional people who were homeless. In attempting to deal with this unmet demand, state governments across Australia have established emergency temporary accommodation programs. These programs find vulnerable people housed in substandard motels, caravan parks with few amenity and little access to support. At a national planning meeting of 100 experts in the homelessness field on the 28th of March this year, A clear message was heard that it was unacceptable that we continue to place vulnerable homeless people in such situations. It will be interesting to see what recommendations get made regarding this issue in the coming months. In regard to boarders and lodgers, many are without effective legal rights in relation to their housing. In particular, many occupants face the following problems: eviction with little or no notice, rent increases with little or no notice, no means of getting repairs done, and no means of dispute resolution. In New South Wales, boarders and lodgers are excluded from protection within tenancy legislation. The current distinction at law being between a boarder and lodger and being a tenant can be ambiguous, legally technical, and very difficult to prove. However, for homeless people and those at risk of homelessness, having no legal protection to their home just perpetuates their lack of stability and ability to establish themselves formally within their community. The current review of the New South Wales tenancy law being undertaken by the Office of Fair Trading unfortunately does not appear to be considering rectifying this situation. The issue of affordable housing supply has been generating major interest in the media recently. We see a real opportunity within the current federal arena for changes to be made that will significantly increase the amount of affordable housing available to people on low income. This issue is an important one when we look at our responsibilities in regard to homelessness prevention. I've recently become aware of families presenting to homelessness services who are not what we would think of as typically homeless. The parents are in employment, the kids are going to school, and on the whole, they are your average family. The issue forcing them to present to homeless services for assistance is poverty. They have been unable to find a property to rent within their price range. Given the tight rental market, the risk of poorer families being outbid is significant. And I have to reaffirm what my colleagues are saying: all Australians have a right to safe, secure and affordable housing. So much needs to occur both at a federal and state level to resource an adequate supply of affordable housing and to address legislative imbalance affecting marginalised and vulnerable people. In regard to the right to the highest attainable standard of health, there is a lot of research looking at the health needs and health impact within the homeless community. Research undertaken in 2004 documenting psychiatric disorder in homeless men and women in inner Sydney identified that the prevalence of any mental disorder is four times higher among homeless men and women in inner Sydney than within the Australian population. A further study found that 10% of people in inner Sydney hostels had cognitive impairment. A person with impaired cognition experiences problems with memory or orientation and may lead to impaired understanding of surroundings, difficulty paying attention, and an inability to concentrate on the conversation or task. These studies confirm what homeless service providers regularly tell them. Currently, people with more complex health needs are not getting their health care and support needs met through their health and disability service providers, which often results in them becoming homeless. A further study published in 2007 in Victoria identified, in addition to that homelessness itself actually created mental illness in many of the actual homeless people. So the presumption that you are mentally ill and become homeless is starting to be turned on its head. You are homeless and you become mentally ill because of your homelessness. So the provision of comprehensive and responsive health programs is key to reducing the incidence of homelessness and requires significant planning, investment and restructuring of how services are delivered to reduce the incidence of people with complex health issues becoming homeless. In addition, we need to look at what planning and resources are required to resolve homelessness for those who are already in this situation. The current environment afforded by the development of the Green Paper on Homelessness by the federal government offers potential to develop comprehensive homelessness strategy that requires the joining up of services and systems to prevent people with these illnesses and disabilities falling through the cracks into homelessness. The right to safety and security. Through my years of working with homeless and marginalised people, I've heard some shocking stories. I quickly became aware of the numbers that experienced traumas that I could never imagine. A 1998 study of inner city homeless men and women tells us that 100% of women and 91% of men involved in the study reported at least one experience of extreme trauma in their life. The trauma events recorded included serious physical assault, witnessing severe injury or death, life-threatening accidents, involvement in fire, flood, or natural disaster, sexual assault, torture, and direct combat experience in a war. One in two women and one in 10 men reported that they had been sexually assaulted. Domestic violence is a major cause of homelessness for women. For women and children escaping domestic violence, we see that they are regularly failed by the attitudes that the community holds regarding their right to safety. Many of the women and children who are unable to access a SAP service feel they have no other option than to return to a violent relationship, placing them at risk of further injury and possibly death. Single women who are homeless, another case, they're invisible to society. They mostly do not meet the criteria to access women's refuges, as they don't have accompanying children. Without children, they are politically invisible, as they do not come into contact with government through state government obligations for child welfare. A report undertaken on homeless women in Western Sydney reported that the collection of data for homeless services in Australia is tied to demand for service. As there are no services for homeless women in Western Sydney, the women are invisible. They're not counted. The report noted that many women self-manage their homelessness through couch surfing, rough sleeping, and engaging in risky relationships to secure a roof over their head. Children and young people comprise the largest group accessing homeless assistance services, accounting for 35% of SAP service users in 2005-06. It's well documented that a period of time spent in child welfare or juvenile detention services increases significantly a child's risk of becoming homeless. We also know that many of the adults in homeless services first come into contact with the homeless service system when they're adolescents. A study undertaken in Melbourne found that of the 5,186 adult participants, 39% or 2,200 of them had their first experience of homelessness when they were under the age of 18. From a policy perspective, we need to see comprehensive and responsive counselling and support services to meet the needs of these traumatised people when they first seek assistance. We need to see major campaigns that challenge attitudes and beliefs that Australia holds to the rights of women to safety and security. Special consideration needs to be given to the models developed for young people. We know that generic models for homeless people will not necessarily meet their needs. We cannot apply adult expectations on young people and need to design services that align with adolescent development principles whilst providing a safe place for them to transition into adulthood. We also need to see major investment in affordable housing, in case you haven't already understood that, to give all people access to a safe place to call home. Right to an income. Access to a reliable source of income is vital to prevent people from becoming homeless. Research has shown us the impact of breaching on Centrelink customers. Significant numbers of people have experienced homelessness due to 8-week periods of no payment when they have been deemed to have failed to comply with a participation requirement. In a study looking at the impact of breaching on income support customers, 41% of the 1,000 participants surveyed reported they were unable to pay their rent. A further 11% reported that they lost their accommodation. People exiting institutional care, such as psychiatric hospital or prison, and women and children escaping domestic violence are eligible for a crisis payment, the equivalent of 1 week's payment of their eligible benefit. Without proper discharge planning and case management, 1 week's payment makes people exiting institutional care vulnerable to homelessness. Okay. Homeless crisis services regularly report on the challenges that people exiting prison face in trying to re-establish themselves on a half payment. When you look at the costs that a person will have, such as travel to appointments, perhaps payment for methadone treatment, cigarettes and accommodation costs, I am not surprised that people feel overwhelmed when they first leave prison, and perhaps consider that life is easier on the inside. The role of our social security system must be considered as part of the development of Australia's response to homelessness, to better target financial resources and supports to prevent people from becoming homeless, or to help people that are homeless re-establish themselves in the community. Right to participation. I stand here very sad because I have to report that we do not have strong models across Australia for the involvement of homeless people in policy development and decision-making processes. Unlike developments that have occurred in the mental health and disability fields, where strong consumer advocacy groups have been funded and supported across Australia, I am only aware of the Homelessness Advocacy Service located in Victoria as a funded and resourced service. There are significant challenges when we look at how we might develop systems to give voice and influence to homeless people. During the Olympics and currently, there are people who have had experience of and are speaking on behalf of rough sleepers, those homeless people who sleep on the streets. From a policy perspective, we need to think about how we hear the voice of the broader homeless community, including children and young people, women and children escaping domestic violence, and families, to ensure that the range of issues and traumas that lead to homelessness are properly considered and solutions jointly developed. The development of the mental health consumer advocacy movement as a funded and appropriate mechanism for gaining expert service user advice on mental health service and policy development was enshrined in the National Mental Health Policy released in 1992. This development has had a significant positive impact on the way mental health and disability services are developed and managed, and has formed the mechanism for frank discussion between service providers and consumers. We need to look to national and state planning mechanisms to give legitimacy and value to the homeless consumer advocacy movement. A well-resourced and nationally endorsed strategy to empower and engage those who have experienced homelessness to provide expert policy advice is long overdue. The right to vote. Voting gives people the ability to influence society in which they live. For people who are homeless, it is not only their democratic right, it can also give them self-worth. They are being listened to. Federally, there are special provisions for homeless people to register on the electoral roll and to vote on election day. However, few people know that this is possible. There's no typical homeless person. The right and ability to vote is different for different people. For fairly obvious reasons, many people who are homeless and rough sleeping carry minimal possessions, including limited, if any, identification. Homelessness New South Wales believes that any provision that forces people to produce proof of identity before voting could be discriminatory against people who sleep rough and other people who are homeless. Homelessness New South Wales is also aware that many women escaping domestic violence are unwilling to attend polling booths and would prefer to postal vote. In regional and remote areas, this is particularly an issue. In some communities, there are only one or two polling places. Currently, there is no capacity for people to use fear for physical safety as a legitimate reason to use a postal vote. This issue requires consideration to create an environment that makes it safe for women escaping domestic violence to participate in our democracy. And we look for legislative amendments that enfranchise homeless people at both the Commonwealth and state levels so that they can participate in our democracy. So, I've touched on a few areas, and in summing up, I want to sort of spend a minute just reflecting on what this snapshot of issues means for the future. When we recognise that homelessness is about more than houselessness, it becomes clear that an integrated approach that takes into account the many factors that lead to homelessness is required. We need to move to a model that acknowledges the rights of homeless people and those who are at risk of homelessness based on their fundamental human rights. Only then will we start to see the policy and legislative changes required to prevent people from becoming homeless. Thank you.